Hello, and welcome to the Agile Embedded Podcast. I'm Jeff Gable.
And I'm Luca Ingenni.
And today, Luca is going to interview me about my practice of test-driven development, which I practice in my daily development work. And I think Luca has some questions for me about that. What do you think, Luca?
Yeah, so maybe a good first step would be to define what TDD is. I have a suspicion that everybody knows, but just in case somebody's not entirely clear about where the limits of the concepts are, what is TDD, Jeff?
Sure. So TDD stands for test-driven development, and it's the discipline of actually writing tests before you write any code. And if you're really doing it well, you enter this loop, this very tight feedback loop of write a failing test, watch it fail, and then write just enough code to make it pass and no more code than that. And people do this in kind of varying levels of purity. I don't necessarily always stick to exactly that tight of a definition, but that's the idea, that you write a test, you watch it fail, write enough application code to make the test pass, and you don't write any other application code until you write another test that fails, that uncovers new functionality.
Yeah, but that sounds kind of ridiculous to me. Why would I write a failing test?
Why does that, here, so maybe I'll turn it around just a little bit. Why does that sound ridiculous to you?
Well, if I already know it's failing, why would I even write it? Like, I want to have a test that proves to me that, you know, something works, that my test passes. Why would I be writing a test that fails?
Right. So the short answer to that is, if you write a test and it passes, do you know the test actually ran correctly and is actually testing what you think it's supposed to be testing?
Yeah, but how do I know it's working correctly if I write a failing test? Especially because I expect it to fail.
Right. So to me, that basically brings about the discipline is, to me, if I don't do this, and say I write a bunch of application code and then I start writing unit tests afterwards and the unit tests all pass, I don't really at that point have a whole lot of confidence that those unit tests are actually testing what I think they should be testing. Those unit tests are themselves code that could be wrong. And so if I were writing unit tests after the fact, I would probably typically write a unit test and say, oh, it passes just as I expected. Am I sure that unit test is testing exactly the right thing? And I would go into my application code, intentionally break it, watch the unit test fail, say, yep, that unit test caught what I thought it was supposed to catch, and then go back in and fix my application code. So when I've done this in the past, when I've added unit tests after the fact, that's literally exactly what I would do. I would go in and break the application code intentionally to make sure that my unit test actually reported a failure to me. Because there have been times when I didn't do that and the unit test didn't actually test what I think it was supposed to test. There was a bug in my unit test. How do you debug the unit test? You need to test the unit test code. And the way to do that is to verify it fails when you think it should fail and passes when you think it should pass. So that's the back and forth. And once I learned to actually write the test first and watch it fail, that just made it easier because I didn't have to go through this effort of breaking things intentionally afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is the whole point of writing your tests first is to be sure that they actually catch the thing, that the behavior that's not yet there. But is that really all there is to test driving your development?
No. So the practice of having that discipline forces a lot of good behavior. It forces you to have unit tests with very high coverage, which you and I have talked about in the past. Maybe I think that'll come up during this conversation, that, you know, you don't think coverage necessarily needs to be as high as I do. And maybe that's a point of disagreement that we can talk about. But regardless, it forces you to have high test coverage where all of your code is tested. It forces you to focus on the testing the interface and not necessarily implementation details. Because, again, like the unit tests you're writing, they should only be on the kind of the publicly accessible interface of your module. And then maybe any side effects it has, you can mock those side effects. We'll get into that. And the number one benefit that I found is that it enforces good architecture. So code that is testable is typically code that is decoupled from other modules. And so if you have spaghetti code where modules are depending on each other too much or too tightly coupled to each other, it is difficult to test. And so if you force yourself to test and you don't allow yourself to write any code until you've written the test, you can get away without doing this, but that just having that discipline really, I find, provides a good forcing function for good decoupled architecture.
So what you're saying is that TDD is particularly valuable for lazy buggers like me who, you know, want to forge ahead and not waste the time writing tests.
I suppose. I mean, it's. I think it dovetails in very well with the overall agile philosophy of. And a colleague of mine put this recently that I really liked how it sounded. Slow is smooth, and smooth is fast. When you're actually writing, when you get into the flow of writing unit tests, you don't write code as quickly as you do without unit tests, because you have to write the tests. And this can be annoying to people who get started with this. They're like, ah, oh, I know exactly what I want to write. I know how it's supposed to work. Just let me write it. And you can. You just have to write a test for it first. But the goal is not to bang out the first version unless you're prototyping. I will get to prototyping as well, and that's an exception. I don't write unit tests first all the time. When I'm prototyping, the point is to get something working quickly and get feedback on that. And it's totally fine to do code spikes and prototyping without unit tests. But this is for final application code, code that's going to go into production. In the end, the goal is to have production quality code. And if you don't write tests for it, then you're not as confident that that code is of true production quality. And so forcing yourself to write the test first just ensures that you get to the finish line faster. You won't get to prototype code faster, but you'll get to the finish line, which is high quality production ready software faster.
Okay. So you just told me you write the tests first, but you're only writing unit tests, right? We're not talking about higher level tests like system tests, integration tests, that kind of thing.
That's correct. I'm specifically talking about unit tests. And since this podcast is focused on embedded development, the unit tests that I write run on the host, run on my development machine, not on the embedded target.
But how can you be certain then that they are actually faithfully capturing the behavior or the correctness, I should say, of your target system, if they're running on the host?
Well, they are but one layer. So it's not like unit test is the only test I'm doing. They're a layer on top of integration tests, which I would run on the target, and, you know, high level system testing, which I would run on the target. And the other nice thing is writing unit tests that run on the host, run on your development machine, enforces good cross-platform modular architecture. So that, you know, it's very, very rare when you're writing things that it truly cannot be separated from your target processor. In my particular case, you know, when I'm writing very low-level drivers that interact with registers, those are often just done on the target. But even there, you know, if you wanted to, you could be very pure and even test those on the target by, doing like essentially writing to dummy registers, to fake registers in your code, and you pass in, you know, a pointer to a memory block, and that's how you would run it on the host. And then on the target, you actually pass in, the address of whatever registers you want to write to. So there does become a limit where at the very lowest level, it can't truly be tested except on the target. But that level is surprisingly low. The space of of application code, embedded application code that can and should be tested on the host is surprisingly large.
So in practice, would you even write tests that for example, write to mock registers, or would you just not test that? How would you approach that in practice?
I've done it both ways, and this is you know, where the purity aspect comes into it. There are some people who would write tests, who would unit test even those low level drivers that are writing directly to registers. I tend to do that in a little more ad hoc fashion, but I will. These are the kind of things of say you're not doing test driven development, and you're writing a serial driver or an I2C bus driver. You would have your development board on your desk, and you're looking up the data sheet, and you're looking at whatever libraries you might be using from the processor vendor. And you just you code up small, simple applications, and you have maybe an I2C chip that your microcontroller is talking to, and you just develop and test in small pieces. You can still do that, kind of forget test-driven development for the very lowest level, and get that working the same way you would without test-driven development, but just keep that interface very, very small. Maybe, again, for an I2C driver, you have some simple interface where it's, write bytes and read bytes, that kind of thing. And that becomes your interface that then all of the code upstream of that depends on that interface, and all of that, you can mock that interface for testing any higher level code. And again, you just keep that non-unit tested interface as small as possible. So in practice, I think writing unit tests for those very lowest level drivers does not provide as much value, because the unit tests are almost exact copies of the code that you're writing. So it really doesn't provide a whole lot of additional value to unit test those very, very lowest level drivers that are interacting directly with registers. Some people do find value in that. I don't. But I keep that un-unit tested section of code, I keep that as small as possible.
I think there is also a risk, now that I think of it, that you end up testing the mock and not really your application code.
So your higher level application code would call this interface for this very low level driver, and you would want, when you're testing your application code, you're then going to isolate it, and you're going to assume that low level driver is implemented correctly because you've tested it separately on the target, and you're going to test that your higher level application code calls that interface correctly. So that's part of decoupling. You have this, I've heard it called this messy middle of glue logic in the middle of your application code that receives function calls from up above and sends function calls down below. And there you have to mock. You have to mock the lower level code. That's how you write those unit tests in practice.
But we've been talking about this whole thing like it's a given that unit tests and test driven development in particular are even a good idea specifically for embedded systems development. And I've done a fair share of embedded systems development, and I don't think I've ever seen anyone actually test driving their embedded systems. Like, is that even feasible? Does that even make sense?
So I can tell you it is feasible, and it does make sense because it's what I do. I wouldn't do it if it weren't feasible. I agree with you that it is very rare in the industry, and it's one of those practices that I am advocating for and trying to evangelize. And I think the thought that it is infeasible for embedded systems, I think that's a myth. And that myth has what's been holding back people who have heard of it and maybe are a little intrigued, but basically say, but it's not really feasible for embedded systems because the myth is that embedded systems development is so fundamentally tied to the hardware that you have to run all of your tests on the target. And that's essentially what I'm saying is you create a very thin layer, a thin interface that isolates your application code, which is the majority of the code, from those low-level drivers that directly interact with hardware. And once you isolate your application development from the hardware, then things become so much easier and so much faster. And when we're talking about agile development, which is the whole point of getting feedback fast, you want to talk about fast feedback, like running your entire unit test suite on the host in 15 seconds, rather than flashing it down to the, you know, embedded target. And then you've got these really clunky interactions where, oh, I can't see that variable, so I've got to like change my serial interface to expose that. And dealing with hardware is just a gigantic pain in the butt. And you talk about friction in terms of introducing friction in development where it slows down that feedback loop. Hardware is the ultimate, you know, brake system on developing quickly. And so divorcing yourself from the hardware and just focusing on the logic and the code, which there's no reason why it can't be written in a cross-platform way that runs equally well on your host, it just makes things easier and faster. Come to my side, Luca. Seriously, it's great over here.
Yeah. All right, fine. You caught me. I've been playing devil's advocate for a bit.
Of course you are. Of course you are. But I think there's probably some genuine disagreement there, but I appreciate you playing the role of the skeptical audience member as well.
Yeah, and just to point out that it's not just Jeff saying that this is a good idea, but in fact there is people like James Grenning, who I think is one of the original signatories of the Agile Manifesto, and he wrote an excellent book called, I think, Test-Driven Development in Embedded C,
yes,
if I remember it correctly.
Yes.
That's just an excellent book. So there's a bunch of very smart people who have done it and who have been advocating for that practice for probably 20 years by now. And frankly, I'm baffled that not more people are using it. Because I was being truthful when I said that I've never observed this in practice. Unless I force people kicking and screaming to try it out.
I'm the same way. I have not seen it. No development team that I have worked with has used it. And it's something I advocate for. And often, you know, I'll come into a project where there's already a substantial code base. And that's one of those problems of the code base that's there is not very unit testable. And so that, it's difficult, you know, when you come into this practice to justify making that initial investment to figure out. And often, and in all honesty, I read James Grenning's book. I love the book. But the first time I read through it, I got it. You know, I understood it and understood the benefit of it, but didn't really get it. And for me, the what made me actually switch over, there's several people who have written a unit test framework for embedded C called Unity, and then a couple of tools on top of that, CMock and Seedling. And they the organization is called throwtheswitch.org, and I'm hoping to have these guys on the podcast at some point. But they've released a couple of video courses that are available on Udemy or through their website that essentially walk through a small but realistic embedded development project using this practice. And that to me is really the kind of teaching model that shines, because even in James Grenning's book, he's kind of making a bunch of individual modules, but it doesn't go through a kind of a simple application from end to end, which is very hard to do in a book. And so until you see it actually working on something that's realistic complexity, you don't really buy it. You're like, yeah, okay, that's just a toy example. You can do it for the toy example, but you can't do it in the real world. And this particular video course, I don't want to, you know, advertise it too much. I'm not in any way affiliated with them, but this particular video course took you through a realistic application, and that really brought me on board and showed me how to do it in practice. And from then on, I was off to the races.
I want to address something that you mentioned in passing twice already, and which made me perk up, which is that you said that unit testing and TDD in particular sort of exposes how well your architecture works. Can you expand on that for a little bit?
Sure. So everyone you know, probably is familiar with the old ways of evaluating the modularity of your code base. You know, you hear the words coupling and cohesion. So any given module should be cohesive. It should perform a function and perform it well. It should, the coupling between different modules should be low, where they, the number of dependencies between different modules is kept to a minimum. There obviously has to be some coupling. Your code, the different modules in your code have to talk to each other. That's fine. But you want to minimize those, the coupling between modules where one has to know too much about the details of another. And when you unit test a module, you're working with that module's code and any dependencies of that module you have to mock. And if the number of dependencies is large, that really quickly becomes a pain in the butt. And you start thinking, gee whiz, maybe there's a different way to architect this. Maybe I need to pull that component into this module or break these apart. I've got too many responsibilities within this module and the interface is too large and your unit test code for that module starts to become huge. All of those are code smells. They're triggers to get you to think, hey, maybe this needs to be organized differently. And there's no magic bullet. You can do TDD and have horrible architecture and just brute force your way through it. You know, there's, no practice is a magic bullet, but this is something, enforcing this discipline on yourself really provides a very strong incentive to have well-architected code. And that I've seen that causal relationship occur time and time again, where the fact that I've done unit tests up front immediately exposed to me, wow, this is too big and I need to reorganize this, where this has too many or it's too small, and really this module and this other module need to be combined, and it's kind of worthless in this, you know, too isolated sense that I had, and I need to make it larger in a sense. Time and time again, I found that testing leads to good architecture in that way. Did that make sense? Did I really answer the question, or did I answer it with more vague, hand wavy language that wasn't really satisfying?
No. I think I'm quite familiar with this experience. Like, sometimes things are annoying to test, and once you start to think about them, they are annoying to test because they're just architected in an awkward way. So, I suppose the message is that if something is annoying, don't just kind of struggle through it, but take that as a signal, as a code smell, as you put it.
Right.
That is sort of an indicator that actually maybe there's something about your architecture, about the structure of your code that you should think about, because maybe it doesn't fit together as well as you imagined it would. And wouldn't it be nice to find that out before you actually wrote all of that code?
Yes. Yes, it would be so nice. So you had mentioned earlier, so you had said that, you know, in your career, you have not seen any development teams work in this fashion. None at all, or have you maybe ones you haven't been directly involved with, but had some contact with? Has anyone in your experience developed in this way for embedded systems?
None I have ever worked with. So I've talked to a couple of people who have done it, such as you. I know I've done it for my own projects. And I know that I've tried to get my colleagues to adopt the practice with varying degrees of success when I was part of embedded systems teams. So I think there's just, I wonder where this resistance comes from, but there seems to be some kind of unwillingness to try it out. Have you experienced that? And if you have, do you have any theories as to why that might be?
I think it's different. And, again, the fact that it is slower in the short term is just fundamentally grating to, like, engineers want to build. We want to get stuff working. And, you know, if you're not working in a safety critical industry, in a regulated industry like medical devices or automotive or aerospace, if you're working in consumer devices, then, you know, I still think this practice has value, but you may especially in that case, say, well, I, you know, in the end, I don't need unit tests. Like, they're not required for me to get to market. So why would I spend time doing that? Fine. And you can get away with that. In a regulated environment, you have to do this level of testing anyway. So to me, that's really kind of a sign of, like, really pushing back on the resistance there is a bit of sign of maybe just lower maturity of your organization, or, you know, I don't want to say low maturity as an engineer. That maybe is a little harsher than I mean. But I think that just the resistance is that, it's new. It hasn't been done before. It does take some investment to learn how to do it up front. And so if you're not already convinced of the value, you know, choosing to make that investment and deal with the growing pains, and you know, at first you're going to write tests that aren't really great unit tests, that test the incorrect things or are way too dependent on the implementation details of your application. And you're going to come out the other side and say, well, the unit tests I produced with this don't have any value. And you're right. And the point is to fix how you're writing the unit tests, not to throw the whole practice away. But that is a very, that's a very common stumbling block, I think, is that it's a difficult thing to put into practice. You have to be convinced up front. You have to be willing to put in the investment to learn how to do it properly, to try it and fail and get better. And it was, you know, I would say from the time I heard of it and said, oh yeah, I think that might actually be really valuable, until the time I was actually doing it in my daily development, that was probably a year. Because I tried it at first and ran into those things and basically just let it slide. And it wasn't until much later when I forced myself to go through these video courses. And I, you know, I basically took half a week and didn't do production work and focused on learning this. And when you're in an environment where it's you're under a lot of pressure, it's very hard to take that time off and really sharpen the saw. And so that's, I think that's why it doesn't happen.
Yeah. So I think you're right. I distinctly remember how starting to write unit tests in general and then trying to test drive my development was just a really grating experience. Like it you know, just as you described, you know, it feels clunky. You're kind of aware that you have no idea what you're doing, and you could just forge ahead and actually do something useful with your time instead of playing around with testing frameworks and writing things that feel sort of circuitous. So I distinctly remember that. But of course, once you learn how to do it, it becomes this really powerful practice, and it really enables you to move faster and also more confidently. Because, you know, if you end up breaking something, you will know instantly. And then you just fix it, and it's no big deal.
Right. There is no greater confidence builder than a large comprehensive set of passing unit tests. I mean, that puts you in such a good base. And then again, you always keep the feedback loop so tight, where you write another, you know, you have this comprehensive test, suite of tests that you've built up, and you write one additional test and you make a small change to the code and your tests fail. You know exactly where the problem is right then and there. You're not discovering this a month later. You know, and everyone knows that kind of the longer bugs linger in code bases, they tend to, not all the time, but they tend to be much more expensive to fix the farther away from the time you write it you get. And this just eliminates that, or it brings the probability of those bugs slipping through much lower. Certainly you will still have bugs in TDD. But then at the end, when you do find those bugs, say in system testing, you add a unit test to catch them, get the unit test passing, and then you know it's never going to occur again. So I would say that if you were starting this on your own, or, you know, if you're intrigued by this practice, it's going to take investment. And just like Luca said, in terms of picking frameworks and getting used to working with the testing frameworks and integrating them into your development process, that's a pain. And, you know, working with someone essentially who can guide you through that process will save you time. This is turning into a light advertisement for my own services and for Luca's services that, you know, this is something I do all the time and I can help you figure that out. So for the listeners out there who are curious about this practice, I can point you to several very inexpensive resources that you'll have to invest some time on your own to read through and learn, or you can talk to me and I can walk you through it much more quickly and get you where you need to go sooner. And so I think that could be very valuable.
Yeah, you know, my son is currently in second grade and he's just now learning how to write stories, how to tell stories. And it's so interesting to watch him struggle with how to tell a story that's not just factually correct, but also intriguing to read by, you know, how you structure your sentences and how you make lively words, that sort of thing. And it feels to me that learning to write tests is kind of the same thing. You need to learn how to tell the story of what the code is supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And at first, you're going to suck at it. And so I think this is why having somebody to guide you is so valuable. Like, I could give my son a book about how to write a good story or something, but I don't think that works. I think you need to have this conversation about, you know, listen to yourself telling this sentence you just figured out. Does it sound interesting? No, it doesn't. Okay, why doesn't it sound interesting? Because you use the same word thrice in a row. Okay, fine. Maybe we find a better way. And I think having those conversations, especially at the beginning, is so valuable and so powerful and will help you to move past this disappointing early phase with much more ease. So if you can find somebody to coach you a little bit and guide you a little bit into, you know, into this practice that is so valuable, sure, you can learn all of the technical aspects on your own. No doubt about that. It's actually the technical side is fairly easy. I think you'll agree, Jeff.
I think so, yes.
But developing the skill of telling stories in a tasteful way is, it sounds kind of artsy that way, but that's what it really is, I think. It's just a learning process, and having a good teacher by your side just makes a big difference, in my opinion.
Agreed. And I think that's, you know, we're starting to run a little bit long here, so I want to make sure to wrap this up fairly soon. But, you know, there's a particular style of writing tests in a behavior-driven development way. You know, there's kind of a particular language, not quite grammar that you use, but, you know, if you look at my tests, so I'm actually looking at some of my unit tests right now, and I'm saying, you know, one of my test functions, it's actually in the name, you know, test, serialize, and deserialize this particular message should return error when buffer too small. You know, so looking at the function name, it's extremely wordy, but you could read that function and know exactly what it's doing. And writing tests in that way is just very clear. And it's like having a certain set of syntax, you know, a given set of syntax that you're sticking with when you're writing tests just makes it easier for someone else to follow. And like you said, tells a story of what your code should do. And you're right. It's, you know, there's a little bit of an artsy component to it, but this is not all science. This is an art. Writing, you know, writing good code and good architecture and good tests. This is all, it's a learning process. And, you know, at some level, software engineers are craftsmen, and we really, you know, the crafting good code it's not a science, it's an art. And so learning how to do this takes time.
Yeah. And let's not forget, it really is storytelling. Like we are writing in code because we want it to be human readable. If we wanted it to be machine readable, we would just write binary.
Right.
But right. We don't. We're writing this for human consumption, so we should tell human stories, shouldn't we?
I think that's a good way to put it. All right. Do you think we've about beat this topic to death?
I think so. I think that was a great one. And just to reiterate, if you're not using TDD yet, give it a try because you don't know what you're missing.
It's great over here. The water's warm. The grass is green. The sun is shining. It's lovely.
Exactly.
Luca, where can people go to find you online?
Well, they can always go to my website, injani.eu. And I realize that this is difficult to spell, so just do yourself a favor and click on the link in the show notes, where I write about all of the topics surrounding software development in a human way.
I agree. That's really your strong point. I mean, you're focused much less on the technical details and much more on, you know, how to create an organization that works in an agile way and really achieves business goals. It's much more about people than about code.
Yeah, the technology is easy. People are difficult.
That's true.
But they're fun. I like them. Jeff, where can people find you?
So you can go to jeffgable.com and find my writings there and find a way to reach out for me. I'm also on LinkedIn. So please reach out. I'm always happy to talk your ear off about test-driven development and continuous integration and kind of bringing these modern agile software development practices to the embedded systems world. I think it's, you know, we as an industry are way behind and I'm trying to get everyone to catch up. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. This has been the Agile Embedded Podcast. I'm Jeff Gable.
And I'm Luca Injani.
And we will see you next time. Thank you.
Bye-bye.